Casa TV podcast. Talk about the best and the worst on the box.
It's the Casa TV podcast, and this is part two of my chat with Gary from the Vault Channel website, who just loves American television. And I wanted to debate with him about whether it was as good as he thinks, and what makes it so attractive to him, and the differences between American and British television. Warning, this debate does get quite heated at times, but nobody was hurt in the making of it. Well, just feelings. The idea was that we debate with you about the good and bad of American television, and what I found, it's no fault of your own, but what I found I was doing was going, yes, Gary, no, Gary, three bags full, Gary, and not actually putting my point across as eloquently or as strongly as I wanted to. And when I finished that part of the podcast, I was looking over my DVDs, I was looking over the listings, and so I now have a sort of a better outline of what I want to grill you with.
And what you're saying to me there, Luke, is that I won round one, and what you've gone away and done is I've won round one, and what you're saying is you've gone away and you've done some research and you think you're ready to step up again.
An unnecessary element of drama to it. So this is kind of my slideshow, my PowerPoint presentation, if you would. If you could take a seat and watch me go through the slides.
Could you tell me where the fire exits are first? And is there any coffee?
I am doing the motions for they are here, here, and here.
Right,
and
lovely.
I'm aware I'm doing the motions, even though you can't see me, I can't see you, and nobody that will listen to this will ever see either of us. Right. One of the things you said at the top was that you enjoy the slickness of and the fast pace of American drama. That's what draws you to it. But I would disagree with that, and I would say that actually, because of the slickness and the fast pace of a piece, it immediately loses its believability.
Let's focus on one thing that you said there, believability.
Yeah, please, because that's what I feel. The majority, and I'm not pointing fingers at everything, but the majority of American drama, American comedy, presents an image to the world of American society, what it would like to portray, but it isn't necessarily believable. Everybody's a little bit too slick, everybody's a little too perfect looking, and okay. I'm not saying that I want everybody to look like Doc Cotton, and, you know...
Fair enough, though, that's a good point. But then I would say to you, all right, why do you watch television? Why does the average Joe or the average John Smith watch television? I think you watch to be taken somewhere that you wouldn't necessarily get in real life. Television is not real life. Otherwise, we'd all be watching docu-soaps and reality shows, and we all know that they're passé now anyway. But television drama is there to take you somewhere, to suspend your belief, turn off the doldrums of your life and enter a fantasy world.
You're saying escapism is the main...
Yeah.
I can sort of agree with that. And sometimes it is nice to shut the world away and escape. But also, do you not watch it from the second perspective, which is that you want to get a window onto a world that you wouldn't normally see?
Yeah, I would agree that the Brits do that better. I would agree that when it comes to what you would call gritty, realistic drama, that... America shies away from showing that because it doesn't sell, whereas the British excel in it because, it as you say, it captures that corner of the market that makes people go, yeah, I can relate to that. That's my life. That I've been through that.
Whether you want to escapist or believability, something I've noticed, particularly living in the States and watching the programmes, here it doesn't feel like you get comedy in drama and drama in comedy. A good example of that would be, in the UK, David Brent. We always took him from The Office not very seriously, but then there was sort of a very heartbreaking and upsetting scene where he drops his facade, if you like, and sort of begs for his job back. You see his world fall apart. You see things like that. There was a miscarriage scene that stands out in Only Fools and Horses where somebody is a very serious issue with somebody losing a baby and then back to laughter again. They can tackle that in a way that I don't know whether American TV or American drama or comedy perhaps manages.
Well, I'll give you that, and I would agree that American comedy is very much that style of the canned laughter or you know, the more kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is supposed to make you feel uncomfortable rather than sympathetic. And that, yeah, British comedy has got a huge, you know, I mean, things like, you know, the end of Blackadder goes forth. I mean, not yes. A dry eye in the house. But yet that programme was never designed to make you do that. It was designed to make you laugh.
And what happens in American sitcoms is you get the setup, you get the canned laughter, and you get the sort of interchangeable characters. And if you didn't know the title of the show, it could be just about anything. You have hits like Friends and The Big Bang Theory and stuff like that. But the majority of it is stick a couple of people in a room, put a sofa there, put them to work somewhere, put some laughter in. Film it in front of a studio audience, get gags out as quick as you can.
Friends probably came as close as any.
Yes.
It had a couple of storylines, the Ross and Rachel storyline occasionally, and then towards the very end, the Monica and Chandler baby story.
I don't think it captured emotion overly well.
No, but it definitely tried to go in a different direction. It tried to say, we're not going to end on a gag. We're going to fade to black in a situation that maybe is more realistic to people that are watching the show. You know, that show, Friends, grew up. You know, its audience grew up with it. One thing I would say to sort of counter what you're saying, yes, British comedy does pathos very well. American drama does it just as well. I would bring before you The West Wing, and I would say to you that there are scenes in The West Wing which bring a lump to my throat every time I see them. Certainly the scene, there's a wonderful scene after Josh, one of the lead characters, gets shot. Yeah, he gets shot, doesn't he, at the attempted assassination of the president. There's a wonderful scene where he gets therapy. And right at the end of it, he comes out of the therapy and his boss says to him, you know, you got a job, I got a job, you got a job. You know, and it just, you know, when you watch that whole episode, it's just like, oh, yeah, that gets me. You know, that kind of respect and love of a colleague there. You know, I got a job, you got a job. It gets me every time.
One Foot in the Grave was remade in America. That, the treatment of that taught me a lot about the control that the networks have, because for anybody who wasn't sure or wasn't aware that One Foot in the Grave was remade for an American audience, what happened to that is that Bill Cosby took the role as Victor Meldrew, originally played, of course, by Richard Wilson. The only similarity to One Foot in the Grave was the fact that he wore a green cap.
Oh, really?
Because the show was not titled One Foot in the Grave or anywhere close to that. Do you have any idea what the show was called?
I've heard it before, but I can't remember it at the moment. So
you've just heard it now. So it was called Cosby.
Oh, yes.
And I think that networks have too much control over things. And that's why sometimes good ideas like One Foot in the Grave or maybe even, perhaps to a lesser extent, Coupling, which lasted a couple of episodes and then was dumped in the States. I think they try too hard to turn it into that average sitcom again. But I mean, moving away from comedy and drama, because you're absolutely right, what somebody finds funny and what somebody finds emotional is never going to sync up for everybody, otherwise there'd be only a couple of TV shows that we'd all watch and enjoy.
Yep.
So why do you think, and I was, what the reason this comes up is because I was actually watching something last night that made me think of it. What I love about British TV and what you should be incredibly proud of if you live in the UK and you have Gary's view that American TV is better and the grass is greener, even if you don't like the shows I'm about to mention, they are things that you would never even get the opportunity to even ignore if you lived in other places. These are things that I call single documentaries or non-scripted shows. These are things that the UK does incredibly well. Inside Nature's Giants, which is an animal dissection series on Channel 4, would just never make it to an American network. Earthflight, which was a series that followed birds around and gave the viewer the bird's eye view, so to speak. And perhaps a great another one of this is QI, which is huge and would, again, never get picked up by an American...
I don't think the Americans have ever really embraced the panel show. You know, Have I Got News for You, Never Mind the Buzzcocks, QI, all these shows that draw on British stand-up comedians and British comedy actors to come on and basically be funny whilst talking about whether it be music or film or sport or topical news and draw on that. I think a lot of Americans have done well on those shows. I think particularly of an American comic called Reginald D. Hunter, who's brilliant whenever he comes on. I actually watched a Have I Got News for You with him on recently, and he's excellent to watch. He's dry and almost British in his style, but with a wonderful American accent that's just, you know, poured out of him.
I'm just trying to get across the variety that you do get and that you should be proud of. And again, I feel... that American audiences, or that American networks, not the audiences, but American networks, tend to talk down to the viewer. They tend to think they know what the viewer will like, and they keep churning it out. Things like Stargazing Live with Brian Cox, which was a surprise hit for BBC Two, and Frozen Planet and Horizon would probably interest an American audience, but they'd never be given the opportunity to see it, because the networks don't think that American audiences would watch it.
Well, I'll give you the main reason. We discussed it earlier. The BBC, which most of the shows that you mentioned are on, are not funded by advertising. There's no advertising on the BBC, something which I know American audiences might gulp at. And it allows them to be very diverse. It also means they are budgetly restricted, which means shows like Birdwatch and Country File and programs like that, which do serve a purpose very well, are almost a niche program. They serve a certain section of the country or a certain section of the population. Things which are almost niche markets, which, as you say, advertisers would never buy into.
But also,
American
audiences
wouldn't have that.
But I don't think that's down to the fault of the audience. I'm not by any means tarring every American with the brush and saying they wouldn't understand this, they wouldn't get this. I'm saying that actually the networks wouldn't take a risk. They know sitcoms do well, they know crime drama does well. Let's churn out more of them than putting something new, interesting and informative on. It's not that there isn't that hunger for something new. But what tires me is that networks will never, unless it works brilliantly somewhere else and they take the idea. I mean, Strictly Come Dancing became Dancing with the Stars. I'd have put money on that not working at all. They don't have ballroom dancing, but I suppose it's the celebrity element that helps that work.
But again, most of that show is driven by the British judges, you know, Bruno Tognoli and Len Goodman. Those are really the stars of the show, along with the stars that dance. You know, they love all that Britishness. You know, how the Americans have embraced Simon Cowell as one of their own, and how now really he's taken the British style over to America and he's now reversing that trend. He's now bringing more of the Americanizing. You know, rumours today that Britney Spears is going to be the new X Factor judge. She might whip out that snake again, mightn't she? You know, out of Toxic or whatever that song was called.
I know the answer to what that song was called, but I'm not going to tell you because it says more about me. It says more about me than it does about you. You only know it's got a snake in.
Yep.
We'll leave that there. But my other point, as far as not taking risks, is that what tends to happen on American networks, and another thing that irritates me, and I am watching my blood pressure go up and down, when something becomes a hit in America, they run with it. You know? And shows tend to overrun. I want to bring The Office up again. Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant, whether you like them or whether you don't, they had a vision with The Office. They did exactly what they wanted to do with it, finished it, and moved on to something else. And the American version of The Office, again, hugely successful, but it will die a slow death or be axed.
Yeah.
It won't have a beginning, middle, and end.
Did I hear that Catherine Tate is joining the American version
of
The Office? Or was that just a rumour?
She's actually on it now.
How on earth does that work? I'm sorry, but
I don't know.
She almost killed Doctor Who. Is she now trying to do that in America? I mean,
Am I bothered, though, really? That's my sort of view on it.
Does this Skype face look bothered? allow me to sort of bring up to your point. I do agree that Americans oversaturate something when it works. When they've got a cash cow, let's call it that, they flog it. And British audiences and British performers know when to put things down. Now, okay, there are times when there are some British performers who don't. But there are some that say, okay, I've done that, I need to move on.
The Office had the beginning, middle, and the end, and it felt like it had a story to tell, and often the purpose of an American show is to just, you know, bring the same characters back, keep doing what works, but not necessarily tell that story. I think that touches on what you were saying. In 24 episodes, you can have a lot of stinkers, but also it's very easy not to have story arcs and a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, and again, I think that goes something again to the argument that you raised yesterday about writers' teams versus a writer, where a writer will have a beginning, middle, and end in their head, whereas a writing team are just told, right, well, you need to get through the next 10 episodes, and different people will come up with different ideas and ways of doing things, which won't necessarily gel together all the time. When it works, when a writer's room works, I think it can make a show very good. You know, a writer's room created Prison Break. We'll go back to that. A writer's room created Heroes. You know, those are success stories of those types of genre. But there's not as many of them as there is in Britain, as we talked about earlier and said. There's a lot of, you know, single writer shows that just, you know, are a tour de force.
We could have saved ourselves a lot of time and not done this podcast, and instead just streamed an episode of a series that was on last year, and we'll be back later this year, called Episodes. Tamsin Gregg and Stephen Mangan of Green Wing, they wrote a successful British sitcom that then came over to America and was changed beyond belief with Matt LeBlanc of Friends in the lead role. And that sort of winked at American broadcasters and sort of said, this is what we do, this is we change it to fit a certain mold. And what happened with that was, of course, that it didn't reflect in any way the show that everybody claimed to love. And
the only problem with that I found, I appreciated the parody, I liked the wit and the sarcasm, I just felt the actual show Episodes just didn't work. It wasn't funny enough, didn't interest me enough. You know, I like the premise, I like the idea, but when I got to it, there was something missing.
Yeah,
I can't put my finger on it. There was something missing. We should probably have some time really discussing these kind of collaborations, and one that sticks in my mind that was a very big shame was the Torchwood that came out last year, which was a cross promotion between the BBC and an American network called Stars. Stars, how can I describe Stars? It's the daily sport version of television channels. It's very
brilliant.
Much, I know. Brilliant. For those that get that reference, it is the lowest common denominator of television.
It is a pay service. HBO's annoying little brother with snot running down his nose and possibly
a gun. I don't know. And what they did with Torchwood was they turned it into the worst kind of badly made American spy show.
And it was almost like somebody had said, let's make a parody of it.
Yeah, and the first episode was kind of this kind of like background to Torchwood. So, you know, for you Brit fans, for American fans to get into it, for you Brit fans to feel like you own it. And then after that, it just turned into the, you know, as I say, a very bad series of episodes of like 24 or Alias or something like that, where the plot went nowhere, the characters were unbelievable, and I'm surprised that the Americans understood a word that Welsh woman says, because I don't get half a word of it.
When they sat down at that initial meeting, I think they probably had good intentions, but it was just the execution of it and everything else that wrecked it right from the word go.
Now, a lot of Torchwood fans will tell you, you know, a lot of diehard Torchwood fans will tell you, oh, it was awful. But a lot of other fans will tell you, well, it never would have got made without them. And they're quite right. The BBC had probably, you know, done it. They did a five-day series last year called Children of Earth, which ran five consecutive nights on the BBC, something they do quite well every so often. It was probably the pinnacle of Torchwood, you know, as good as it could get, on BBC One, prime time, and it kind of almost ended the series, you know, everybody dispersed at the end, and that was the end of it. And really, the BBC weren't going to make any more until Stars stepped in and said, we'd like to buy the concept. And then Russell T. Davies said, well, if you do, then we want some say in it, because we don't want to just give it to you lock, stock and barrel.
Yes.
And realistically, the same thing is happening. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard very vicious rumours that the Americans are making Sherlock.
And they're called it Elementary.
And they're casting Lucy Liu as Watson.
Well, let's talk then about today's news that Only Fools and Horses is being remade with John Leguizamo, who I know from Ice Age. That's about the only reason I know him.
And John Leguizamo was very good in a British, an American series. That, what was it called? It was only about 6 episodes. It was on the USA Network, isn't it? It was about a bank heist. Vantage Point or something like that, and he was very, very good in that as one of the kidnappers.
Well, he's
one
playing Del Boy.
Oh dear!
This is the bit that makes me laugh. This is the only laugh. If it makes it onto screen, because more often than not these things won't. But this is the best part that I read today, and I've tweeted about. If you want to tweet back, feel free. They have Trigger, who, of course, if you're Only Fools and Horses fan, you'll know Trigger's purpose. You'll know him as a character. You'll know why he's there. You'll know what to expect.
All right, Dave.
Yeah, they have turned Trigger into a sort of gangster con man.
To me, when I look at the Only Fools and Horses plot outline, it's almost like an episode of more like Starsky and Hutch. And Trigger has been turned into Huggy Bear.
That's what they've done. To me,
if television and go, what's good for taking? You must have been watching a lot of UK Gold if you think Only Fools and Horses was worth recreating America.
I don't want to talk about Only Fools and Horses for too long, although it's one of my favourite things. But I know it does incredibly well. There's a Portuguese version that does incredibly well.
But how long ago was that Portuguese version made?
Well,
I bet you it's not recent.
Exactly. And I understand that American would like to recreate something that's been such a big hit in the UK, but the only reason it was such a big hit in the UK was David Jason, Nicholas Lyndhurst, the writer, and the premise was typically British.
Yeah.
You know, why try and remake that? And that actually brings up the next point. Why remake something rather than why wouldn't NBC show Sherlock? Cut it down, fit the ads in. They could probably lose 10, 15 minutes if they had to. Why not? I mean, Australia is a good example. They get a nice mix of their own homegrown drama. They get UK drama and comedy. They get American drama and comedy. And it's just seen as one big television melting pot. So why would the Americans decide, do you think, to remake something rather than just show it?
I believe there is some merit in taking an idea and reinventing it.
But if something works somewhere, and I'm not saying it will work everywhere, but for Luther, everybody seems to love Luther. Why not show Luther on NBC or ABC or Fox?
I think the problem with that is that Luther translates well to a major American network. It does get done on BBC America, which I think is more the appropriate channel for that kind of thing. I think it goes back to the fact, and there are some remakes, I mean, they haven't really worked. The Americans did actually do a pilot of Prime Suspect, but it bombed in America.
Well, I think the reason it bombed was, why call it, that could have been called anything, why call it Prime Suspect? The only similarity was Jane Tennyson was her name. Mm. That was about it, there was nothing else.
I saw the trailer at the Upfronts last year. We did a whole feature on the Upfronts for our podcast. Yeah. And when we looked at it, we thought The Prime Suspect was pretty much a winner. We looked at it and thought, yeah, this could work. You know, that kind of sexism in the workplace that happened at police forces, that whole idea that she was leading a force. It worked very well in an American series called The Closer. So we thought, yeah, you know, which is a cable network program. We thought, yeah, bring that to a big American audience and we think it could work. But instead, the Americans really just didn't get it, and it bombed pretty quick.
Where do you stand on censorship?
I stand on censorship? Okay.
Because this is a big subject. Here we go. Well, I want to be finished in under an hour. The 9 o'clock watershed, whether you agree with it or whether you don't, and what gets shown after that 9 p.m. watershed, it serves its purpose. And American networks don't have that. Everything is. I mean, they wouldn't recommend that kids watch Criminal Minds and things, but they could, I suppose, if you know they had access to such a thing. And then there's things like HBO, which you paid for, which allows a little bit more leeway on, you know, bad language, sex scenes, things like that. A good example of this would be Shameless, which was only on at 10 o'clock on Channel 4. The first series of Shameless in the UK was just incredible, I thought. I was just blown away by it because it was just so unlike anything I'd ever seen before. Appropriate Adult last year on ITV, which was about Fred and Rose West, just made me feel brilliantly uncomfortable in the nicest way possible, and I was just gripped right from the word go. And do you feel like American TV is held back by its lack of 9 p.m. watershed in the fact that it can't be as gritty as perhaps sometimes it wants to be?
I think until the introduction of HBO, I would agree. I think certainly 80s American television was slightly more safe and bland in that area. You know, there was no mention of swear words. There's no nudity. And then with the invention of cable television, shows like Dexter, shows like Mad Men, Californication, The Wire, and what it does is that kind of allows you to be, if you are into that realistic style of drama, then you get your cable network and you get your fill that way. And I think there's definitely a room for that, and I think some of the best American drama that's been of the last 5 to 10 years, you know, things like The Sopranos and The Wire, as we mentioned, are these kind of very realistic, where, you know, if you censor The Sopranos, what's left? And I think very much that American drama was saved by the cable networks a little bit. And it's probably led the networks to be a little bit more... There are shows that push those boundaries a little bit more. Programs like Cougar Town, which I know is more of a comedy, but, you know, that certainly would never have got made 10 years ago. Programs like Weeds, I know, again, that's a cable network channel, but that's a program about drug dealing. The fantastic Breaking Bad... These programs would not have been made 10 years ago in America. Americans have kind of realised that there is room for that gritty, real harder style of drama.
Well, I don't know. Did you ever see a thing called The Lakes?
Yes. John Sim.
John Sim, Jimmy McGovern. And it was about this... I mean, I could watch... That was from 97. And I could watch that now and still feel like it stands up. But you watch it again and you think, God, there's a lot of sex scenes in this, and God, there's a lot of drug things. And that was, you know, primetime BBC One in 1997. That's just something you wouldn't have seen here if I lived here in that period. And it's
going back even further, a big show in the UK was called This Life. And that was full of realistic drama and... you know, drug use and partying and alcohol and sex and violence, and that was a huge hit on BBC Two, and people look back on that series with a lot of fondness. That never would have got made in America. No way that there's an audience for that kind of program.
I agree completely. I think that we're two countries divided by a not so common language.
Yeah.
And that will always stand in the way, I think,
and that's where I think the watershed comes into America. There's not a watershed, there's a channel shed.
The only TV podcast with the custard in the title, I think. Yep, it's the Custard TV Podcast.
Just quickly, we talked about Pan Am bombing terribly.
Yep,
and BBC One and ITV trying to put American drama on their schedules in prime time. Another one that sprung to mind when I thought about this a bit deeper was Pushing Daisies a few years ago, which ITV scheduled on a Saturday night.
Oh, gosh.
Are they just picking the wrong things? Or do you think that just, as much as we talk about this, there isn't a great deal of ITV and BBC One viewers wouldn't really... They want to watch British drama and homegrown stuff, really. Or are they just picking the wrong material?
Let me give you the background on this one. The reason being that this has been messed up for a lot of people is ITV saw the success of The X-Files on BBC. And what they did was they bought the very dark, very dangerous, very very dodgy Millennium, which was made by Chris Carter after The X-Files, which dealt with a gentleman who got inside the mind of serial killers. And they put it on at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, and it received record complaints. It's a very dark show. It was very grisly. You saw the murders. You saw them catching the killer. And it's almost a pre-runner of Criminal Minds, but a lot darker. And ITV got terribly lots of complaints for bringing this over here. Channel 4 then invested and saw the popularity of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and bought the very darker, much more deadly Angel and tried to put it on at 6 o'clock of an evening. And again, lots of complaints and, you know, huge loss of viewers because they had to cut so much of the episodes out and up. And really, Channel ITV have never recovered from that. Pushing Daisies was a small drop in the ocean that they've done. They've never brought an American television program over. And actually, ITV in the 80s used to be the home of, you know, the American programs. You know, the Baywatch, A-Team, Airwolf, Baywatch. Yeah, Knight Rider, yeah. Street Hawk were all on ITV. At that kind of 5 o'clock Saturday tea time program.
I think people saw those. They didn't take those particular shows seriously. I think they were more tongue in cheek, and people watched them.
But it worked. I mean, I grew up on those. I mean, people of my age grew up on those programs. You know, we sat down every Saturday night. Well, that's right. Where am I now? That went away on a podcast.
We know where the wrong turn came from now.
Too much Baywatch A Team and.
It can be very therapeutic doing podcasting, as we just learned. It's cheaper than counselling.
Whom do I send the invoice to for your billing at the end of this, Luke? You know, where do I make the checkout to?
I will. I'll put all the information in an email to you. Don't worry about it. And also, Sky One is venturing more into making its own drama and comedy.
Yes.
Is that a decision, do you think, because they want to step away a bit from just being a.
I think that's how television channels. I think it's just how television channels evolve. Sky has built its television audience up by buying the biggest and best from America. You know, it bought Lost, it bought House, it bought Prison Break from various UK channels, and it bought 24 from the BBC, Glee, and that's a tactic. You know, and that makes people get out there, and it makes people go and. It makes people go and buy a Sky dish and get cable channels over here. I think Sky One will produce some good drama to come. I know they do some big Christmas blockbusters. They've done Treasure Island and a Terry Pratchett story that was written specially for Sky. And they put a lot of money and a lot of big names go on that. But I'm hoping that Sky will eventually produce a really good, critically acclaimed and successful drama quite soon. I don't know where it's going to come from.
Sort of on the right track with Mad Dogs. I mean, if you'd have asked me 5 years ago, would I be wanting to watch a Sky One drama? I'd say no. No. So they've gone in the right direction.
And actually, one of their dramas called Strike Force has now been Strike Back. Sorry, has been now taken up by an American network. And he's going to be shown over there.
But that's it's a very American in its style. It's very explosions and...
Yeah. I think it draws very much, it's more of, you know, very much like Spooks and stuff like that, although more of a sort of gritty army drama. But I think it will eventually, that they will produce a show that will be commercially viable and will be something that, you know, you'll then know Sky One for.
This is the Custard TV Podcast.
So... having spoken about our loves, dislikes, likes, and disagreements, if you were chucked out of your house tomorrow and you were told you had to go somewhere where you wouldn't have regular access to the television and you had to rely on your DVD collection, would you take mainly American DVDs with you, or would you take British DVDs with you?
I'm sorry to say, and I know this will cause some hardy derision amongst our British fans, but the Brit is going to take Americans. I'm going to take I'm taking my West Wing complete series. I'm taking my 9 series of Seinfeld. I'm taking my 4 series of Alias. I'm taking my 24 box set. I'm taking my House box set. I'm sorry, but when I get kicked out, those are going with me.
Right.
Not much Brit stuff is going to get a run through, I'm afraid. I'm definitely very much more the fan of the American drama. Not so much the comedy, although some comedies are very good, but very much more fan of American drama than British drama as a whole.
What would have to change then? What would have to change for you to go, do you know what, actually I don't enjoy it, I don't look forward to this as much as I did?
If they stop coming out with good ideas, let me bring our session to a close by pointing our good viewers in front of something coming up. There's a television program airing in America now, coming to UK soon, called Awake. Stars a British actor
Jason Isaacs.
And written by people who have good credentials and producers who've worked on good shows before, about a bloke who suffers a serious car accident and goes into a multiple personality disorder, where in one part of his life he believes that his son died, and in another part of his life he believes that his wife died. And you have no idea what's reality and what's fake. And in both worlds he's a police officer, in both worlds he's seeing a psychiatrist, and the show has a wonderful concept. And that concept alone, the fact that somebody's come up with that idea and is putting that onto screen and with enough money can do it right, just makes me want to watch it. That whole concept brings me in. And then to sort of counter that, fans of Lost will be hearing the fact that there's a television program called Alcatraz, where...
Oh, please. Right.
The show might not be good, but the concept, the fact that all the people from Alcatraz time into the future...
Yeah, but how can that work? How can you...
But that's the point, is that, come on, it's not supposed to be reality. Good television is supposed to take you somewhere. What is Doctor Who? Doctor Who's not reality.
I know
Spooks
not
isn't reality. No, but I'm not stupid enough to know that. Alcatraz is not going to be everybody's cup of tea. I do know that sometimes those concepts. But is I want people to be keeping coming up with good ideas that I myself couldn't come up with, and I find that happens more regularly on American television than British television for me.
So I think we're going to call it a day there, but I think we've got an awful lot of things still to talk about. So if you're up for more,
definitely
let's do more. And I know the world will be, as a general consensus. I know the world will be crying out for more. If for some reason the world goes topsy turvy and people want to speak to you rather than me, how do they get in touch with you and agree or disagree with the points you've made?
Well, firstly, my window is always open if you wish to send a carrier pigeon. Then secondly, a more traditional method, I'm on Facebook. Search the TV Drama Club on Facebook. That's the name of our podcast, which you can also search on iTunes. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter name is the_Gary_show. Very vain. But when you've got 500 more than 500 followers, you can afford to be vain. Luke. And obviously my work that I do via Vulture Hound, which is an online magazine, www.vulturehound.com. There's various contact details on their website as well if you are at all interested in contributing or just reading what rambling stuff I put up.
And if you are listening to this and you have any genuine questions for either of us, or you have some points that you'd like to raise that either side in my corner or side in Gary's corner, or can see the different points of view, but are a neutral party. Perhaps you like certain American shows but not others. Perhaps you don't like any British drama at all and will only ever watch American stuff. Tell us why, and we'll read it out if we get enough information from you in the next podcast. I would be genuinely interested to hear which side most people tend to fall on nowadays in the world of choice that we have at all our fingertips now.
And I think we can both end on this point, and I will end the call at the end of this because I'm sure it'll be contentious, but I believe round two went to me.
You can believe that. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening and thanks for spending time with us, and hopefully we'll be doing it again. And if round two did go to him, then I'm bringing my A game, to use an American phrase, damn it, for round three.
That means round three to me. Right, okay. You're using American phrases.
Very vain. Very vain.
Luke, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Custard TV Podcast.